Good morning. This morning's reading is Daniel chapter 7, verses 1 to 18. It can be found on page 744 of the Pew Bibles. Daniel 7, 1 to 18. In the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel saw a dream and visions of his head as he lay in his bed. Then he wrote down the dream and told the sum of the matter. Daniel declared, "I saw in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of heaven were stirring up the great sea. And four great beasts came up out of the sea, different from one another. The first was like a lion and had eagle's wings. Then as I looked, its wings were plucked off, and it was lifted up from the ground and made to stand on 2 feet like a man. And the mind of a man was given to it. And behold, another beast, a second one, like a bear. It was raised up on one side. It had 3 ribs in its mouth between its teeth. And it was told, 'Arise, devour much flesh.' After this I looked, and behold, another, like a leopard, with 4 wings of a bird on its back. And the beast had 4 heads, and dominion was given to it. After this, I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, terrifying and dreadful and exceedingly strong. It had great iron teeth. It devoured and broke in pieces and stamped what was left with its feet. It was different from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. I considered the horns, and behold, there came up among them another horn, a little one, before which 3 of the first horns were plucked up by the roots. And behold, in this horn were eyes like the eyes of a man and a mouth speaking great things. As I looked, thrones were placed, and the Ancient of Days took his seat. His clothing was white as snow, and the hair of his head like pure wool. His throne was fiery flames, its wheels were burning fire. A stream of fire issued and came out from before him, and a thousand thousand served him, and 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. The court sat in judgment, and the books were opened. I looked then because of the sound of the great words that the horn was speaking, and as I looked, the beast was killed, and its body destroyed, and given over to be burned with fire. As for the rest of the beasts, their dominion was taken away, but their lives were prolonged for a season and a time. I saw in the night visions, and behold, with the clouds of heaven, there came one like a son of man. And he came to the Ancient of Days and was presented before him. And to him was given dominion and glory and a kingdom, that all peoples, nations, and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion, which shall not pass away, and his kingdom one that shall not be destroyed. As for me, Daniel, my spirit within me was anxious, and the visions of my head alarmed me. I approached one of those who stood there and asked him the truth concerning all this. So he told me and made known to me the interpretation of the things. These 4 great beasts are 4 kings who shall arise out of the earth. But the saints of the Most High shall receive the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever, forever, and ever. This is the word of the Lord.
Are we on? Oh, we are. Amazing. I had to change microphones a minute ago, so that's why I was asking the question. Hi, everyone. Good to see you. If I've not met you before, my name's Henry. Just as Keith said, if you're new here, I'd love to meet you. I'm the assistant minister here, and I'm helping organize the church welcome lunch. So do come and say hi if you're new after the service. Anyone can come and say hi, really, to be honest, but especially if you're new. When I was at school, I think the subject I was probably worst at was English. And I really didn't enjoy writing stories. I respect those who are good at writing stories. I don't mind telling stories. I don't mind listening to stories, but writing stories, I just can never do it. And my stories always ended up being really bland. It goes something like this. Bob was always the main character. Good name. It's an easy name to write. Bob went to school. Bob played a game of football. Bob lost a game of football. Bob got sad. But then Bob won a game of football, and Bob was happy, and Bob went home. The end. Not the best story, right? There are better storytellers out there than me. But the reason I tell that story is because my English teacher would always give me the same feedback, and I remember it to this day. And that was this. She'd write in the margin, show, don't tell. Show, don't tell. She said, Henry, I don't just want these boring, bland facts. I want you to show me what happened. I want you to paint a picture with your words of everything that's gone on. I want you to make me feel what is happening. And I never succeeded at that in my English class. But the Bible does. The Bible doesn't just give us, though sometimes I would like it, a list of here's everything you need to know about God, here's all the ways you need to live. In a way, it does communicate really clear truths about God in some of the letters. But sometimes it gives us poetry. Sometimes it gives us stories of that just seem so far removed from our modern context. And in this section of Daniel, it's very much show, don't tell. We're given these vivid dreams, these vivid visions that show us the truth, that help us to feel the truth. Because this chapter could have just said, human kingdoms are bad, God's kingdom's good. And that's kind of it. But it goes, here's this vivid picture, and I want you to feel what is happening. And the type of vision we see here is what's called apocalyptic. And if you've watched a lot of films, when you hear the word apocalyptic, you think of Apocalypse Now and the end of the world and Armageddon and things like that. But the word apocalypse in its original sense is far broader than that. It means to reveal. The book of Revelation at the end of the Bible comes from the same word that apocalypse comes from. And apocalyptic visions and literature and the genre of apocalypse in the Bible is peeling back the curtain, like a stage, peeling back the curtain of physical reality, of seen reality, to reveal the spiritual truth underneath. And that's what this vision in Daniel does. It peels back the physical seen reality of human kingdoms to reveal the beastly nature of humans turning away from God to rule in their own authority. It reveals the beastly nature of human kingdoms when we choose to rule without God. And if we can grasp this chapter, it will help us to see history from the perspective of God. And it will help us to live faithfully in a faithless culture. In the reading we had today, there's two main things that happen. There's loads of things that happen, but there's two main movements that happen. And that's that these beasts are dethroned and the Son of Man is enthroned. The beasts are dethroned, they're brought low, and the Son of Man is lifted up, exalted onto his throne. And we're going to take those two things one by one. So firstly, the beasts are enthroned. The vision starts at verse 2, and Daniel's at the seaside. But this isn't Blackpool Pleasure Beach or Formby National Trust. This is a picture of chaos. It's a picture of enmity with God. That's what the sea often symbolizes in the Old Testament. The sea is being stirred up and whipped up. The wind's getting going. The waves are crashing and bashing. It's choppy. It's tense. And from the sea emerges these four beasts. And they're so scary that in verse 15, we see that Daniel was anxious. In verse 28, we didn't read it, but it's worth noting that Daniel was alarmed and his color changed. Daniel woke up in a cold sweat. He's had the nightmare of nightmares because these beasts are terrifying, they're terrible, but we must note that they're temporary. So these beasts are terrifying. The first one that emerges is this lion, this mighty, roaring, raging lion. And if that's not enough, it's got wings like an eagle. So if you try and escape from the lion, it's going to fly over and it's going to catch you. There's no escaping this beast. And scholars say that this beast could represent the kingdom of Babylon, the kingdom we see Daniel in at the beginning of the book. And we saw Nebuchadnezzar humbled and brought low, and this lion's wings are clipped, and it is made to stand like a human. But it says, well, either way, it's a terrible, frightening beast, just like the kingdom of Babylon was terrible and frightening. The next beast is, I think they get worse as they go on, is this ravenous, snarling, grisly bear. Its mouth dripping with flesh. It's got three ribs trapped in its jaws of its previous victim that it's just crushed. And then a voice comes and says, go on, eat some more. And you can imagine this bear going, yeah, go on, and chasing after its next prey. It's ferocious. It's bloodthirsty. And this beast is said to represent the kingdom of Medo-Persia. In chapter 5, the kingdom that took over from Babylon, that crushed Babylon. And it's said to represent Medo-Persia because that empire was made up of the Medes and the Persians. The Medes were small and not that powerful. The Persians were mighty and vast and seemingly invincible. And this beast, as we see in the text, is raised up on one side. That's what most scholars say. The third beast is this leopard type thing. And this beast is super fast. It's like the Flash if you're into DC Comics. It's so quick, but it's also got four heads. So it can see all around. It's got wings. It's agile. You can never get away. You can't escape this beast. It rises up quickly. It presses its victims. It's terrifying. It's said maybe to represent the Greek Empire led by Alexander the Great that swept across the known world with astonishing pace and was agile. And would rise up quickly and crush its enemies. These beasts represent terrifying human rule. Don't we sometimes look around and see the evil forces of this world and think, they just look invincible. They just look so mighty. How is anyone ever going to dethrone Vladimir Putin? How is anyone ever going to deal with the evil and the injustice of the world that even the so-called better governments can't seem to get a handle on? We live in what is, one of the betters are not a great word, but a democracy that is, by comparison, prosperous compared to other countries, but yet the last 14 years haven't left people feeling particularly happy about living in this country. Even the so-called better governments have a full way short. And that's because when human beings choose to rule without God, it's terrifying. There's injustice, there's brokenness. And that is a terrible thing. These kingdoms are not only terrifying, but they're terrible. Because we get to the fourth beast, and this beast is the worst of them all. It's not even compared to a created animal. It's terrifying, it's huge, it's made of iron, it's got iron teeth, it just crushes everything that comes before it. And then out of the 10 horns, which I imagine is just massive, great, big, sharp things that could smash anything out of the way, out of the 10 horns, 3 of them fall down, and out emerges this kind of little horn. And this little horn has human eyes, and it raises itself up over the world and looks down on the world and starts shouting great things. What's the exact wording? It starts speaking, yeah, great things. It's boasting. It's telling of the might of the achievements of the empire. It's saying, look at me, look at all that we've done, speaking great and powerful things, looking down on the world, declaring the achievements of this kingdom. This kingdom is said to represent the Roman Empire, who used to declare their empires, their emperors, Lord of Lords, King of Kings, were all about their propaganda of the Roman Empire. And again, it shows the terrible nature of rulers that choose to raise themselves up and put people down. This world is full of rulers who are all about lifting themselves up, the little horn boasting away at their own brand, all about their kingdom, all about their power, and people are crushed in their wake. You see, human beings were made to rule with God and for God. And when we choose to rule without God, it's subhuman. And here we see this little horn yabbering away, boasting of all the triumphs of the kingdom. These terrifying, terrible kingdoms just seem too big and too strong. What's the answer? What is the answer to the human desire to rule without God and fill the world with injustice and pain and brokenness? Well, the next thing we see is that these human kingdoms are temporary. In the scene, I imagine it a bit like a pantomime scene. You've got the little horn yapping away, still going on. Look at how great I am. Look at all that we've done. King of kings, Lord of lords. We're undefeatable. And behind the little horn, some chairs are being put out, one by one. But these aren't ordinary chairs. They're thrones. A throne room is being assembled. And then someone takes his seat. And in the passage, he is called the Ancient of Days. And he is pure and white, unblemished, completely good. And he sits on a chariot throne. A throne that is made of fire, that wheels are made of fire, and from it streams of fire come forth. And he takes his seat on his throne. And thousands upon thousands of people are surrounding him, serving him, praising him, ready to fight for him. And then the books are opened, the books of human history. And he gets ready to judge the world. While the kingdoms below are raging, while the kingdoms below are just yapping on about their achievements, the Ancient of Days is sat on his throne, untouchable, undefeatable, invincible, sat there ready to judge human history. When I was at school, primary school, for a couple of weeks, I was the leader of a gang. Yeah. Foxton Village Recreation Ground in South Cambridgeshire, I was the leader of a gang. And our base, we were called the Burger Boys. And we set up base in the woods, which is basically a set of about 5 trees in the park. But we set up base in the woods. And we built ourselves a little fortress out of sticks and leaves and mud. And we felt invincible for 2 weeks. We ruled the forest. No one else was allowed in. All these 4- and 5-year-olds were coming in. And we were saying, get out, go on, away you go. And then, remember, it's this day. Few of us came to survey our fortress, to survey our kingdom, and it was gone. Because the park keeper had come along in his big lawnmower, steamroller thing, and just decided, we don't need these trees, bam, they're gone. Flattened, done. The Burger Boys were no more. There's a reason you've never heard of the Burger Boys. You have now. There is a reason you've never heard of it. Because we were here 1 minute and gone the next. We didn't make an impact on history. We were there and there and gone in the blink of an eye. And compared to the Ancient of Days, compared to the eternal, pure, chariot throne Ancient of Days, the spotless, undefeatable, unrivaled Ancient of Days, human kingdoms are like little childhood gangs. They're like the Burger Boys. They come and they go. It doesn't feel like it, does it? From our perspective, but when we zoom out and look at human history and think about the Ancient of Days, every tongue in heaven and earth declaring his glory. We've sung about him. The Ancient of Days who will be exalted forever and ever. And his kingdom will not pass away. There is a kingdom that lasts forever. But human kingdoms rise. Human kingdoms fall. The Roman Empire spread across the face of the known world is now no more. Human kingdoms rise and fall. But there is one, the Ancient of Days, who, in verse 11, as the horn is still speaking, as the horn is still yabbering on, declaring its greatness, smash, is judged, is gone, is crushed by the Ancient of Days. No more. You almost want to say to the horn, it's behind you. Because he's just looking away. He's looking away. There's a reason the horn has eyes. He's looking away from God, looking at his achievements, his rule, his power, looking away from the Ancient of Days, looking at his own kingdom, looking at his own stuff, looking at his own power, declaring his brilliance, and then gone. And one of the tough things of preparing a sermon on this chapter is thinking, where are we in this chapter? How does this chapter relate to us? And the first thing is acknowledging there are really powerful, strong human kingdoms that just feel invincible. There's human rulers that commit atrocities that just, when we look at it from our perspective, we're like, God, where are you? How are you letting this continue? And we're called to trust that the Ancient of Days is on his throne, undefeated, unrivaled. The other place we can see ourselves in this passage is, I think, in that little horn, which I keep doing this because he just keeps yapping on, talking about himself. And don't, even though we're not rulers of great nations, don't we all have that instinct inside of us That instinct to just rise above the crowd and declare all that I've done, to make the conversation about me, to make my life about me and my thoughts and my attitudes, to make my relationships about me, to serve in order to get back. Don't we have that desire to put ourselves at the center? Don't we want to make our time about me? Don't we want to rule our own little kingdoms and make our own little choices? And don't we find it a bit annoying when people try and tell us that we're doing things not quite the right way? Don't we have that little instinct inside of us? We all choose to rule without God. We all have a beastly nature that give on our own steam chooses, says to God, no, I'm okay without you. I'm going to do my own thing. But the hope of this passage is that evil, suffering, and world leaders, human leaders, don't have the final say. There is a God, we've read about in the catechism slot, who will judge the world. He will put an end to all evil. He will put an end to everything and everyone that stands against his good plans. Because he is perfect and good. The Bible word is righteous. He always does what is right. He is perfect. And no human being has honored him in the way we should. Kingdoms turn against him. As individuals, we turn against him and try and rule our own lives. And the message of the Bible is that, and it's a hopeful message, is that one day he will sweep all of it away and he will judge this world. It's a sobering message and a sobering reality. And in our context, we can feel, isn't that a bit judgmental to say that, to think of a God who stands on his throne and judges? But it's actually, one thing I say is it's the basis for true equality in a society. Because before God, we're all equal. Before God, we're all equally in need of his mercy. Before God, we equally fall short. It doesn't matter your status, your power, your wealth. It's the great leveler that there is a God who judges. But then we need to consider, what are the other options? The first other option for reality is that there is nothing out there. There is nothing above us who would judge us. I saw a tweet this week from Ricky Gervais, and it said, do you feel meaningless, broken? Can't remember the exact words he used, but do you feel worthless and like life's getting you down? He said this, don't worry, you'll be dead one day. And that's Ricky Gervais with a bit of dark humor, but his worldview behind it is saying, ultimately, it doesn't matter what you feel because everything's meaningless. There's no ultimate right and wrong. We came from nothing and we're going to nothing. And our modern world talks about progress, but calls us to believe in it without believing in a God who will one day remake the world. It calls us to take that leap of faith, to say this world is going to get better, when actually a secular worldview says, no, we came from nothing and we're going to nothing. That's one option for reality. Another option for reality is that the evil will win and that God isn't powerful. I don't think I need to persuade you that that's not a great option. The third option would be a God who just sweeps everything under the carpet. A God who just says, oh, it's okay. We're not going to deal with the wrong. We're just going to forget about it. We're going to push it to the side. But that God is no God, because he's not able to deal with the wrong in this world. In fact, that God, you could say that God is evil for letting all the wrong in this world go. The fourth option is a God who is good and powerful, who wants to remake this world into a place where it is only good all the time. A God who is a just God. A God whose heartbeat is to save those who are broken and lowly and bring justice for the oppressed. A God who, as Keith said, whose kingdom sin does not belong. The attitude of the little horn does not belong. But that leaves us with a problem, because we crave justice too as human beings, don't we? We crave to see justice. But the problem is, if this God is perfect, sat on his throne, then every single one of us are the wrong side of his justice, because we haven't lived perfect lives. We've fallen short. We live with ourselves at the center. We haven't honored the Ancient of Days as we should. And so we're left with a problem. We desire justice, but we need mercy. What is this God going to do about it? Well, that brings us to the second half of our reading. The beasts are dethroned. That leaves the whole world with this problem. How are we going to be? What's the future? What's the answer? The answer is that the Son of Man is enthroned. In verse 13, we see the clouds of heaven symbolizing the presence of God. God is here in this part of the vision. And from these clouds comes one like a Son of Man. He's not a beast. He's a man. He's a God-man. And to him is given what Adam and the rest of humankind has thrown away. You see, mankind was made to rule with God and for God, but in Genesis 3, Adam threw that away, chose to rule for himself, said to God, no thanks, I'm going to make my own choices. And we all have done the same throughout human history. But to the Son of Man is given dominion, is given authority. He is God's king. So in this Son of Man, we are seeing man as man was made to be. We're seeing true humanness. If we want to know what it is to be human, we need to look to this Son of Man, who is true humanity and also God's king, sat on God's throne. And his kingdom is now, it's not yet, and it has no limits. His kingdom is now, and verse 13 is really key here, because the Son of Man came to the Ancient of Days. This vision is not talking about the end of time. Now, we're talking about the Son of Man coming to the Ancient of Days. You see, centuries later after this vision, there was a man that came to this earth called Jesus Christ, and he called himself the Son of Man. And in Mark chapter 14, we see him in a dock, him being judged by the religious leaders who thought he was a beastly troublemaker. And they turn to him and they say, are you the Messiah? Are you God's king? Are you God's chosen savior? And he says, I am. And you will see the Son of Man coming on clouds of glory and sat at the right hand of God. Jesus knew who he was. He claimed to be the Son of Man, God's rescuing king. And after that, he went to the cross. He died, and it looked like the Roman Empire had defeated the Son of God. But as we read in Colossians 2:15, on the cross, he disarmed the rulers and authorities, putting them to open shame, triumphing over them. On the cross, Jesus defeated evil. On the cross, Jesus went into death and defeated death. Why? Because on the third day, he rose again. And then we read on the Apostles' Creed, he ascended into heaven. He went to the Ancient of Days and sat down at the right hand of the Father. He went to the Ancient of Days after defeating death and sat down on his throne. And he reigns now. Governments come and go, kingdoms rise and fall, but Jesus is on his throne. It says in Psalm 2 that the nations rage against each other and against God, but he who sits in the heavens laughs because he says, I've set my king on his throne. Jesus rules and Jesus reigns. This world is hard, life is hard, the realities of this hard are difficult, things seem uncertain, but if you believe in Jesus, you can know he's on his throne. He rules and reigns now. That the ultimate reality of this world is not Keir Starmer, is not Donald Trump or Joe Biden. The ultimate power in this world is Jesus Christ, who gave his life up for the world, the servant king who loves you. That's our king. And his kingdom is now. But his kingdom is also not yet. In the Hobbit, I've not read the books because I just watch the films. There's a scene where Smaug the dragon is thrashing and bashing about. He's destroying the city. And Bard, who's the hero in that moment, goes up this high tower, gets this big, long iron arrow, and he pulls it back on this big slingshot that he's made, and he fires it. And it goes straight into the heart of Smaug the dragon. At that moment, Smaug is defeated. He's done for. There's no coming back from it. But as he goes down thrashing and bashing, taking as many people and as many buildings down as he possibly can. He's defeated, he's gone, but he's lashing and thrashing about. And that's what we see in verse 12. After the little horn and the last beast is smashed to the ground in judgment, the rest of the beasts, verse 12, their dominion was taken away. They've also been defeated. The arrow's gone, straight to the heart. But their lives were prolonged for a season and a time. They're given some extra time. They haven't taken it, they're not winning, but they're given some extra time. But this time is limited. It's going to be for a season and a time that is set and appointed, not by them, but by the Ancient of Days. So we're living in a reality where Jesus is on his throne now, but yet we still see the evil and brokenness of this world. We still see human kingdoms seeming invincible, seeming powerful. We live in a now and a not yet time, which is a really key lens through which to see the Christian life. Jesus reigns now, but there's coming a day where every eye will see, every knee will bow, every tongue will confess that Jesus is Lord, and he will remake this world, and it will only be good all the time. That's not yet, right? That day is coming. Jesus is on his throne now. That day is coming. In our personal lives, I am a child of God, not because I'm good, but because I believe and trust in the Lord Jesus. But I long for the day when I will sit in my Father's house. I am a forgiven sinner. My sin completely wiped away and dealt with, but my life's a mess. My life is chaos. Life is hard. Life is difficult. Life is a struggle. And I long for the day when Jesus will come and remake my broken heart fully and finally, give me a new body, fully redeem my everything. We live in a now and a not yet. There's a time in a football season where a club wins enough, but it's usually Man City, annoyingly, but there's a time where a club wins enough points that they are the champions, but there's a period of time, maybe 2 or 3 weeks, before they get the trophy. And so no one can defeat them, but they haven't been crowned yet. And so they have to play the rest of the season. And sometimes they lose games, sometimes they win games, sometimes they pick up injuries, sometimes there's drama in the press. But all the way, once they pass that points tally, they know they're going to get the trophy. And that's where we are now. Jesus has won the victory. He is the champion. And we long for the day where he will be crowned and he will lift the trophy in glory. And the beautiful thing is that he has won that victory for his people. He wants his people to join him in that victory. He wants us to taste that victory now. As we look on this broken world, we can know that Jesus is on his throne and he loves me and he rules. And even though my life is chaos, I can have a certain hope. And he's brought for us a future, which will only be good all the time. Verse 18, we skip ahead a little bit, says, and when I read this, I just read the Most High will receive the kingdom. But it says, but the saints of the Most High, those who believe and trust in his name, the saints of the Most High shall receive the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever, forever, and ever. It's laboring the point, isn't it? It's forever and ever. It's never going to stop. You see, the kingdom of the Son of Man has no limits. It's not limited by geography. We skip back to verse 14. It's for all peoples, nations, and languages that they should serve him. And it's not limited by time or death. It's a kingdom which shall not pass away, and his kingdom that shall not be destroyed. It shall not be destroyed because he's defeated death. He's defeated the ultimate evil. He cannot be destroyed, and his kingdom cannot be destroyed. And therefore, those who believe in him, though they die, yet they shall live, as Jesus says in his own words. Those who believe in him shall not perish, but have everlasting life in the kingdom of the Most High, in a kingdom that is fully just and good and beautiful and everlasting. A kingdom that is full of joy, a kingdom that is full of beholding our Creator God. That's the hope of Christianity. And the dividing line of who's in and who's out is not race, it's not class, it's not ability, it's not what you've done, it's grace. Have you accepted God's gift of grace? Have you put your trust in Jesus Christ? Have you believed that he is your Savior and your King? And those who believe in him, those who call upon his name, he gives the right to become children of God, heirs to the kingdom, who look forward to his eternal hope forever. So how do we live? How do we live this week in this now not yet scenario? Well, Jesus He's a good person to go to figure this out. Before he went to his throne, before he went to the Ancient of Days, he said some last words. He says in Matthew 28, "All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. So therefore, go. Go and make disciples of all nations. Teach them about me. Baptize them in my name. And behold, I am with you to the end of the age." As we live as Jesus people in this world, we are called to go. We are called to be a people that say, "Have you heard about this kingdom that's never going to end? Have you heard about this kingdom that stands strong even when human kingdoms are in turmoil? Have you heard that you can be part of this kingdom and be completely forgiven and have eternal hope by grace? By just believing and saying sorry and trusting in Jesus?" We're called to go and to love people and to invite people because Jesus is amazing. We're called to go to people no matter what their political opinion is, no matter where they're from. We're called to go. We're called to connect. We're called to love. But also, we're called to challenge. The gospel both connects and challenges because we're called to say, look, there, you need to stop following your own way and become a disciple. Stop following your own little kingdom. Follow the kingdom of Jesus. That word disciple means follow. We call people to turn away, to repent, to follow Jesus, which means admitting we get stuff wrong. It means admitting that I'm going the wrong way. It means admitting that on my own steam, I'm heading to judgment. But it means following King Jesus. Follow it, living in his hope, living in his family. And living in the knowledge that kingdoms rise, kingdoms fall. He is faithful through it all. Can I invite you this morning, if you haven't already, to join the now not yet kingdom that has no limits? To stop living for our own kingdoms, to stop following our own ways, and to follow and put our trust in King Jesus. And can I invite you, if you claim to know King Jesus, will you go knowing that all authority in heaven on earth has been given to your king? Would you go knowing that it's really, really scary to go and stand for Jesus and live for Jesus in the world? But what does he say? I am with you. I am with you to the end of the age. I'm with you and I'm going nowhere. I'm with you and I'm undefeatable. I'm with you and I've won the victory. So go. Go and live for King Jesus. Let me pray. Yeah, Jesus, we just thank you that, as we're going to sing in a minute, kingdoms rise, kingdoms fall, and you are faithful through it all. Humans come and go, human kingdoms come and go, our lives come and go, human relationships come and go. But the Most High rules and reigns. The Son of Man has come to the Ancient of Days and is sat on his throne. And thank you that you invite us to joy that victory. You invite us to know you. You invite us to be part of your kingdom. We thank you in your name. Amen.